Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal: enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye and WisPolitics look at the run-up to the November 6th election. But first, WisEye was there. Eric Holder in Milwaukee saying elect Tony Evers and Mandela Barnes. A Milwaukee police sergeant demonstrates body cameras for lawmakers. Two Republican members of the Joint Finance Committee, Senator Tiffany and Representative Bourne, say Tony Evers would force massive increases or cuts in basic state services. And thanks to the East High student who gave us a wonderful rendition of the national anthem. Wish I was there.
What we're going to give you today is just a little demonstration of not only the body camera system that the city of Milwaukee uses, but we'll also talk about our program and kind of what led the city of Milwaukee to developing the body camera program. The camera system that we use is the Axon brand. It's called the Flex camera. In particular, it's the Flex 2. We have what's called the low rider. This takes the point of view option, puts it up on my head, especially if you don't have sunglasses. And then the final option they have is a glass mount. So these work with the Oakley flak jackets, which are replaceable lenses. I can put clear in for the daytime, but I can wear the camera like this as well. And that largely takes care of the point of view options that Chief Flynn was so fond of.
I am here to enthusiastically support Tony Evers and Mandela Barnes to be governor and lieutenant governor of this great state. It is time for new ideas. It is time for a new vitality. It is time for this state to turn its attention toward the problems that the average person is facing here in Wisconsin on a day-to-day basis. If the people of Wisconsin really want to move this state forward, they will come out, they will vote in huge numbers on November the 6th, and they will vote for these two men.
We know crafting a budget takes a reasonable approach to invest in a variety of priorities for the state of Wisconsin. Tony Evers just can't stop prioritizing spending for his union pals. When you take all of his reckless spending, along with the agency requests that have just been rolled out, other priorities, and costs to continue programs like Medicaid, the Evers tax increase will need to be huge. Wisconsin will no longer be open for business under Tony Evers.
But when you're going to spend $1.4 billion on education, which he's already proposed, you can check the numbers, but I think we generated a little over $1 billion more in tax revenue for this budget versus the previous budget. What is going to get cut? What taxes are going to go up? That's the question that needs to be posed to Tony Evers. Let's not stop the growth of the Walker economy here by going backwards a decade.
A decade of disinvestment has not magically solved problems, has not increased student performance or improved our competitive edge. Divisive solutions from Washington and Madison haven't made things better. These policies are failing us, but the people of Wisconsin know there is a better way. Together we can restore respect for Wisconsin schools and educators. Together we can reinvest in our schools so that every kid can thrive. And together we can actually bring civility and collaboration back to public education and public life. We know there's a better way. We know it's time for a change. And change, folks, it is in the air. Thank you so much. God bless you all. And on Wisconsin.
Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave?
Let's take a step back this week and let's look at how healthcare, it's a huge issue. All the polls show that. Let's just talk about how some of those healthcare issues are playing both first in the Gov's race and then the U.S. Senate. I mean, we're not going to politifact it. We're not going to say who's right, who's wrong. But let's put some context to those issues, okay?
Okay.
Let's start with the Gov's race. First of all, Governor Walker authorized the Attorney General Schimmel to join that federal lawsuit in Texas to void the Affordable Care Act. And that's become a huge issue in this debate. Any PSs before we go to the pre-existing conditions?
No.
No? Okay. Now let's talk about how that has lately, in the last 2 weeks, focused on pre-existing conditions. And now's a good time to hear first a Tony Evers ad, and then a Rebecca Clayfish ad, and then I was fortunate enough to get interviews last week with both the Attorney General and the Governor on the issue of pre-existing conditions. So that'll lead in. We'll come back and talk about that. Let's listen to those four candidates right now.
What we're going to give you today is...
For 8 years, Scott Walker has worked to sabotage the Affordable Care Act and undermine its protections for the 2.4 million people in Wisconsin with a pre-existing condition. As someone who has beat cancer, I am one of those people. But despite his record, Scott Walker is now telling Wisconsinites to trust him on this issue. So Scott Walker, if you're watching, I have a challenge for you. If you want to protect the millions of Wisconsinites with the pre-existing conditions, drop Wisconsin from this lawsuit today, because actions speak louder than empty political promises.
I'm Rebecca Clayfish. I'll never forget my battle with cancer or the impact it had on my family. That's why I'm shocked Tony Evers and his allies say Scott Walker would end protections for people with pre-existing conditions. People like me. Today in Wisconsin, people with pre-existing conditions are already covered. And as long as Scott and I are in office, they always will be.
Well, the problem is that Obamacare is failing. It has been a series of promises that have not been kept. And now Congress has changed the rules by taking away the tax penalty, so it is now unconstitutional. And we're going to see even more failure because now no one's going to have that incentive to buy the insurance because there's no penalty for not doing it. So we can either let this die slowly, or we can tear off this Band-Aid now and get to work putting something in place that makes more sense.
Your campaign put out a statement yesterday saying you'd be willing to call a special session on pre-existing conditions.
Oh, absolutely. If there were a change, and right now, just so it's clear, anyone with pre-existing conditions in the state of Wisconsin today is covered. This is only if something were to change either in the courts or the Congress. I don't anticipate any of those going into effect before January when the legislature comes back, a new legislative body comes back. But if it happened before then, in either case, absolutely. And I don't think there's any problem with that. The State Assembly passed it earlier this year, and I, of course, called for it way back in January. The State Senate was waiting to see, and they felt like it was already covered. But as the circumstances change, I'd call it in a heartbeat, and I believe we'd get it passed immediately.
JR, here you have Tony Evers, a cancer survivor,
mm-hmm.
and we're grateful, and Rebecca Clayfish, a cancer survivor, them talking about pre-existing conditions. Mr. Schimmel says ACA is unconstitutional, therefore he has a duty, along with other attorneys general, to void it. And then the governor is saying, I would at the drop of a hat call a special session if the federal judge voids the ACA, knocking out pre-existing conditions and potentially a provisions that children can get health care with their parents through age 26. Is this, let's talk about pre-existing conditions. Is it the governor and the lieutenant governor playing some serious defense here?
Well, of course. If you go back and look at what's happened in this country in the healthcare debate in the last, 8 years, Democrats have gone beyond the defensive about the Affordable Care Act / Obamacare
right.
to now being on offense in this cycle. And the reason they're on offense is they're looking at the popular provisions of that law, coverage till 26, your parents' pre-existing condition protections, and focusing on those. It's interesting, last couple of cycles, taking the Medicaid money to expand coverage, that was popular if you talked about it that way. Okay. But Republicans used that to say that Democrats want to expand Obamacare. That made it unpopular. Democrats feel like they're on the higher ground right now in the healthcare debate, that they've got the upper hand and they're pushing it. In the U.S. Senate race, it's all about healthcare. Tammy Baldwin's hitting Lee Vukmir on pre-existing conditions, about opposing a bill while she's in the state assembly that would have required insurance companies to treat those with being treated by orally for yep. chemotherapy, the yep. same as those intravenously.
Yep.
It's all about healthcare. Why? The Democrats think it's the ball's in their court. that's why you saw Scott Walker this spring proposed this wraparound program for those who buy their coverage to the exchanges, the healthcare exchanges through Obamacare,
yes,
to try and lower their cost. That's why when you saw an attack ad from the Democratic Governors Association hitting Governor Walker about protections for pre-existing conditions, saying that he wants to take those away, that immediately the campaign had Rebecca Clay Fish in an ad looking in the camera saying those will always be protected as long as Scott and I are in office.
Yep, that's the ad we just saw.
So
right?
They are trying to push this issue. Now, the pre-existing condition discussion, I mean, it's interesting because on the one hand, you have Rebecca Clay Fish and Scott Walker saying that, yes, well, you're protected, but the protections are from the Affordable Care Act. So if that lawsuit's successful, those protections go away. They say, but hey, we had this high-risk pool before that we supported that provided coverage for those with pre-existing conditions.
Yeah.
But Tammy Baldwin says, yes, but in a tweet yesterday, said, well, yes, Leah Vukmir, but that pool only covered, in her words, like 1% of people have pre-existing conditions in Wisconsin. They're, Republicans are pinning this on, you know, it, we're going to protect you.
Yeah.
But the Democrats are saying, well, yeah, but you say that, but look what you're doing.
Right.
And the Democrats, the attack is, but your actions show you want to get away with the Affordable Care Act. By doing that, you take away the protections. And oh, by the way, your call for a bill or special session, Governor Walker, there is no signs of it getting through right now. You have to have the Senate come back and pass the bill to put those protections in state law.
And the Journal Sentinel headline was, Governor offers no details of what his bill on pre-existing conditions would say. So
which Governor Walker, if you follow his Twitter feed, was very unhappy about, saying he said what it would be like back in the State of the State address, I believe, when he called for the bill. But again, it didn't get done.
Yeah.
It passed one House but not the other.
Yeah. So this issue, as I interview Democratic candidates, they continue to say, take the federal money to expand Medicaid. That's a very common theme. Almost every Democrat I interview, Democratic candidate. And then this $200 million reinsurance plan, well, that's in place to hold down premiums for those that get insurance through the marketplace through the ACA. But, and it's supposed to be a five-year program. I got that clarified last week. But you and I know the next session could do anything it wanted on health care, on
and
state issues.
With the Medicaid money, again, if you go back and look at the last couple cycles, Republicans kept talking about, you know, this is to try to redefine it, that it was trying to expand Obamacare. This morning, a new ad from the Democratic Governors Association, which has got a group called Stronger Wisconsin,
Yeah. Goes
after Scott Walker for not taking the money, saying it could have been used to hold down health insurance costs and charges that he turned down that money because he thought it would hurt his presidential bid. It does two things. One, it hits Walker in health care, and two, reminds voters he ran for president in 2015 and kind of left the state, which was the beginning of his nosedive in the polls.
Right.
Now, he rebuilt his reputation kind of through last year in the polls at Oyster Marquette and gotten back to about even, but it was a rough period in 2015. He was running for president, and that adds to remind people of what they weren't happy about in
the
first place.
You alluded to it, but let's do a little deeper dive at healthcare issues in the U.S. Senate race. First of all, the idea of repealing Affordable Care Act, that's what Donald Trump and Leah Vukmir are all about,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then Tammy Baldwin, she voted no against that. So, but the uncertainty is where the Affordable Care Act is now that you've lost the mandate and other key provisions, which we heard the Attorney
absolutely.
General talk about.
And now the attack on Tammy Baldwin about health care is about the single-payer system or Medicare for All.
$32 trillion.
There's an ad from a super PAC that backs Leah Vukmir that says that would be $100,000 for a man, woman, child to pay for the cost of that program. You know, and Baldwin has not backed away from it in face of the attacks, which again goes to show that Democrats feel like they are on solid ground with health care and they think they've got a winning issue for them.
I do not know the answer to this question, JR. Do you know where the $32 trillion price tag came from?
There was a study, and I can't remember who put it together, that went over that cost because it's the Bernie Sanders. It looks at the Bernie Sanders proposal and didn't estimate the cost for that, like over a decade or something like that.
Okay. Now talk to me about the issue of the care of vets at the Toma VA Center and both sides of that.
Well, if you go back, I think it was 3 years ago, there was a problem at the Toma VA where they were overprescribing painkillers to veterans being treated for various things. There was a veteran who overdosed.
Tragically died, yes.
Tammy Baldwin's office got a report about what was going on right around the time that this soldier had died. Didn't act on it, which was unusual because if you know Baldwin's reputation, it's one for being great on constituent relations. But her office fumbled the ball. It came out that she had this report, didn't say anything about it. She fired a staffer, she demoted another, and then took a pay cut for her chief of staff, Bill Murat. But Republicans see that as a vulnerability for her. It came up in the 2016 race mm-hmm. with Russ Feingold and Ron Johnson. What's going on now, though, is Leah Vukmir is struggling to get support from independent groups because she's down the polls. But this would be a very probably potent attack against Baldwin about how she mishandled that report. What she's been doing is focusing on what she's done since then. You know, she's got a group called Vote Vets, kind of a progressive organization, defending her on the attacks. We saw one ad from Concerned Veterans for America, a conservative group, saying Baldwin didn't show up to these hearings, that she failed to do her job, which could have maybe, you know, dove into the Tome VA more. Vote Vets came up with a response ad. But we're not seeing heavy play just yet on that, although Vukmir has been pushing the issue, like in press releases and in stops. She did a couple of veteran roundtables this week, trying to push, you know, this attack that Baldwin mishandled this and people were hurt because of it.
Right. And now let's talk about the issues you alluded to earlier. Senator Vukmir, State Senator Vukmir's vote on cochlear implants, hearing aids, oral chemotherapy. One of these votes, I was in Green Bay yesterday, I saw an ad and it referred to one of her votes in 2014. Hmm. So she's playing defense on some of these votes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, both of these women have records. They've both been in office for a long time. Vukmir, for example, a few weeks back was going over, you know, Baldwin's votes in the 90s on all these prison bills, you know, and how she didn't protect people on X, Y, and Z. Now Baldwin's going over Vukmir's record on health care. Again, because Democrats think health care is a winning issue, they're going to jump on these issues. Vukmir has been saying she supports protections for those pre-existing conditions. Baldwin's saying that's not enough. You supported a bill to repeal
right.
Affordable Care Act, so how can you say that? And they go back and forth. But the ads are up, and they're hitting Leah Vukmir on this issue.
And then finally, something you alluded to earlier, Wisconsin did have a health insurance risk-saving plan, and it was kind of a triangularly financed, and it did work, but it was put out of business by the ACA. And Leah Vukmir now is offering that as some potential future option for health care in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and pointing that as something that she supported in the past to try and deflect these attacks.
Yep, okay. Time to go to Let's Call, a segment called Family Feud. This is so interesting. The Bryce family. Randy Bryce is the Democratic nominee in the 1st U.S. House District. His brother James, in a police uniform, you saw the insignia, said, don't vote for my brother Randy, who's shown contempt for those in law enforcement. But there's tragedy here. There's irony in that the mother of Randy and James said, this pains me. I knew my sons didn't disagree. There is now a group of people from Washington who consider it a good idea to pit my boys against each other for their own political gain. But they didn't consider a mother's pain at seeing her children used as tools. And then, as you know, Mr. Bryce just cut a TV ad this week saying, I've made mistakes in the past. I was raised to own up to what I did in the past that was wrong. Randy Bryce can't play offense when he's playing so much family defense, correct?
No, there are a couple layers here. One, the Congressional Leadership Fund is a group that ran the ad featuring James Bryce saying that he can't support something who's sort of contempt for law enforcement. It's why supporting Brian Stile, the Republican in the 1st Congressional District. Then the Randy Bryce campaign released this letter from his mom denouncing the ad, saying shame on Paul Ryan and this CLF, which is kind of an arm of House GOP leadership that tries to maintain Republicans in the House. So you have that layer. Then you have the attacks on Randy Bryce, which are about his past. He's had 9 arrests. He's got runs with the law. Did the ad acknowledging that. But what's going on is this family drama. What I don't know is, like, does this cut too deep? You go a bridge too far when you get into family stuff like this, because you have the letter from the mom, and you have James Bryce going radio and saying, no, those aren't her words.
Yeah.
Then you have her getting a call from an Associated Press reporter saying, those are mine, those are my words, it's my letter, and then she breaks into tears talking about what's going on. So, you know, I mean, don't mean to be flippant, but it's not going to be a comfortable Thanksgiving dinner in the Bryce household.
Yeah.
But there is this issue here that Randy Bryce has got baggage. The 1st Congressional District is not a swing seat. I mean, Trump won it by 10 points in 2016. But Randy Bryce raised a ton of money with this kind of viral video they rolled out early summer that featured his mom. He's been a fundraising powerhouse ever since then. Now, earlier it was the opportunity to beat Paul Ryan, or at least keep Paul Ryan busy, right? Now that Ryan's not running for re-election, it's, well, can you win that seat? The New York Times poll last week had Stile up by 6 points, so It's a Republican-leaning seat. You'd have to have a really big blue wave to maybe make it even.
Right.
But Bryce has got a lot of money. Can he fend off the attacks? Can he overcome this baggage that he has? I don't know. But it's interesting that in a seat that is pretty Republican, the Congressional Leadership Fund is spending $1.5 million on this TV buy. They have to put resources in to hold that seat
right.
in this environment.
Right. I've heard you say you always got along with your brothers, didn't you? Let's
no
move
comment.
On. Okay. The latest Charles Franklin MU poll on the governor's race showed among likely voters, Tony Evers 49%, the governor 44%. That's slightly beyond the margin of error. And let's put a footnote in here. In August, they were tied 46-46. The governor said, we've shown time and time again when we've been down in previous polls, grassroots organization getting out and talking to voters can really make a difference. Most people realize Wisconsin is working. We can't afford to turn back now. Mr. Evers, the diversion that the governor tries to use as a wedge hasn't worked. The people of Wisconsin know better. How big a deal is this 20 Evers beyond the margin of error?
No, there are a couple things going on. One, the sample shifted and its political makeup from August to September got more Democratic, so there's that piece to it. But diving in the numbers a little deeper, what's interesting to me is even after Walker and allies spent like $10 million on TV, most of it attacking Tony Evers, and Evers and friends spent about $3.2 million, Evers' favorability rating didn't really change. In fact, it got slightly better. Now, it's slightly better within the margins of error, so it's not really a big movement, but you're not seeing his numbers change dramatically. That raises the question. Are the attacks on the middle teacher who viewed porn at school, made inappropriate comments about female students, are those attacks working or are they not? Now, Walker people say that their own polling shows that there's progress being made in that front, but from Marquette at least, it's not working. Raises the question, is there a voter fatigue about Scott Walker? He's been in office now for almost 8 years as governor. He's been through two elections, plus the recall,
yes,
plus a presidential bid. Is there a general fatigue? Is it driven by Donald Trump? It's happened in Washington, D.C. What's been consistent in the polls that I've seen is that Scott Walker is not doing well with independents. And you're seeing that drive a lot of the ad strategy that he has. He's one, proposing like a child care tax credit that was in his Department of Revenue Agency budget request this week, also made into a TV ad. He's pushing things that appear to be appealing to independents. Two, they're trying to tear down Tony Evers. I mean, it's a fact of life in politics. If you are an incumbent, your numbers aren't that great, it's easier to tear down somebody else's than to build yours up. So that's part of what they're trying to do. What I don't know is where do they go next? They've hit him on the teacher stuff. They've hit him on prisoners, saying that he wants to release violent prisoners. The new tax seems to be you can't afford Tony Evers. He's going to raise all these taxes, and he's, you know, a threat to the economy.
Senator Tiffany and Representative Bourne said that in which I was there.
So where do they go next, and will it be effective? You know, if you've pulled that money up right now and haven't taken out Tony Evers, where do you go?
Okay.
And if this trend continues, it gets harder to move people the more you get toward the election. So it's something to watch for Walker.
Let's turn to the MU poll on the U.S. Senate race, where Senator Baldwin Widener lead, 53% to 42%, a 12 percentage point margin. And go back to August, that was, for all intents and purposes, dead heat, 49-47.
Yeah. Well, remember the August sample was a little more Republican?
Yeah, I remember you pointed that out.
And in talking to people on both sides of the aisle in August, their argument was, that was great news for Leah Vukmir, unless. And the unless was if the September poll came in and there was movement toward Baldwin that made a 10-point advantage. Well, now we've got 11. So it's going to make harder for Leah Vukmir to go out and pitch to people, hey, come play in Wisconsin. Now, for the last month, she's had that window of, like, go, hey, we got a race here, come play,
yeah,
that kind of thing. But now you go, okay, how do you make that argument? Oh, and by the way, I've seen Joe Manchin in West Virginia a little bit stronger for Democrats. Depending on what measure you look at, John Tester in Montana looks a little bit better for Democrats. So maybe they could free up some money, like in theory, right? But all of a sudden now Texas, they're talking about Texas being competitive.
Right.
That's an expensive place to go play. So rather than the discussion being, oh, the map Democrats face is so difficult with West Virginia, Indiana, Missouri, North Dakota, and Montana to defend, along with Trump states like Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, the discussion has shifted toward, okay, Republicans have to at least keep an eye on Texas, defend Tennessee, Arizona, and
yes,
Nevada.
You're right.
While playing offense, I mean, even in Indiana, I mean, I lived there for 11 years, went to high school and college there, worked for the Associated Press there. that's not a Democratic state, but you're seeing polls diagonally up. Now, it's a long way from November, okay, and polls will change.
Yes.
But the point I'm getting to is Florida looks competitive all of a sudden. We're not on the top of the pecking list. We're like number 10, but a big gap between us and number 9. So it makes it harder for Vukman to get that attention, that national money to come in. The caveat is Diane Hendricks, mega donor for Republicans, in 2016, she almost single-handedly funded a group that helped keep Ron Johnson afloat during that period where he was kind of like struggling against Russ Feingold, yeah, and he ended up winning. So there isn't like this race is over.
Oh, I agree. And just a footnote, Charles Franklin, the pollster, white college-educated women are very heavily pro-Democratic this year. Just quickly, this the first race for Attorney General, incumbent Republican Brad Schimmel, 48, Josh Call, 41. But I think the biggest story here is how many voters don't know, haven't heard of. For the Republican incumbent, it's 56% don't know, haven't heard of. Josh Call, 87%. Just quickly, JR, how seriously can we take this? It's a first poll, head-to-head, Schimmel versus Call, but with those unknowns?
There is an issue for Josh Call that he didn't have a primary, so maybe it's only coverage of him really because of that. He hasn't been up on TV. I haven't seen any mail from him, any radio. He just hasn't had broken through yet. People don't know who he is. That's right. a problem for him.
But it's interesting. You have the Democrats leading in the Gov, Democrats leading in U.S. Senate, and Republican Schimmel, although the biggest winner is unknowns.
I'll get to that in a second.
I understand. Okay, stock report rising.
So budget requests. So every other September, we get these agency requests. They are often wish list. They're not necessarily what they're going to get. So far, I've counted at least $2.45 billion with a B, and requested new spending. We call it the base year doubled. So
yes,
the current year, 2018-19, that's your base year. You double that, then you tack on what you want to get your base for the next budget. Well, by that measure, they're asking for a lot more money.
But $1.4 billion of that is Tony Evers, who wants $600 million more for special ed. Excuse me, go ahead.
That's right. Part of this is political. So you have $1.4 billion from DPI. You also, by the way, the other big drivers are Medicaid, $600 million for the Department of Health Services, of that almost $500 million for Medicaid. The cost to continue, we call it, basically is covering the current caseload with rising costs.
Yeah.
Corrections wants like $140 million. More politics, that's DOJ.
That's a 9% increase, go ahead.
Wants more money.
Yeah.
They want to shore up the crime lab, by the way, which has been a weakness for Brad Schimmel.
We had to farm out the rape test kits.
I still haven't seen budget requests from the courts, from the Supremes, the circuit and the appeals court levels. So those will maybe add the bottom line a little bit. But this is the thing. These are requests. Whoever's governor for the next, 2 years will have to pare through all these things, figure out how the budget should look when he or she introduces it in February,
January,
most of the time.
Early February. But this also says if Governor Walker is reelected, I cut $2.4 potentially billion from the agency's budget, what they wanted, what the bureaucrats wanted.
And it's also just one piece. We will find out after the election, of course, what the revenue projections are for the next 2 years from Department of Revenue Administration. That'll give us the other piece of the picture of, okay, this $2.45 billion request, how much do you have to grow,
cut,
or increase revenue taxes growth, to make it all balanced? So it's just one piece of the picture.
Okay, we're almost in overtime.
Next. All right, so Carl, here's the issue. Nobody knows who he is. So if you have a Democratic wave, how do you ride it if you're not known? Now, Call will be on TV mid-October, I believe he goes up. The Democratic Attorney General Association will be on the air for him. But we have the Republican counterpart doing stuff for Schimmel. Schimmel's been on the air. He's getting his name out there before people start to kind of get crowded with all these ads from the U.S. Senate, governor's race, everything else. The question I have is, one, is enough time for Schimmel for Call to kind of break through, get out there? And two, will the tide be enough? I mean, it's nothing to panic about yet for Democrats, but I would be worried a little about a Democrat that Schimmel hit 48% when both Walker and Clayfish, or Walker and Buchmeier, are like around 42, 44.
Right.
There's a perception that people like Republicans as Attorney General. That might be part of it. It might be that he's breaking through a little bit, but there's something going on that Schimmel's above the tide.
Okay, and I know we're almost out of time, but I want to add this footnote on Call. In August, 91%. Didn't know or hadn't heard of Josh Call. So he's only cut it by 4 percentage points. Okay, falling.
So Rebecca Clayfish, look, with Lieutenant Governor nominees, if you're the governor on your ticket, you just want to do no harm. Don't do anything to embarrass us. And it's not like Mandela Barnes has been perfect. He made this comment about Trump supporters that if you backed Obama in 12, And they went to Obama or Trump in 16.
We don't want
still to. Support Trump. We don't want you. Now, Republicans span that to all Trump supporters, which is not what, you know, Mandela said. He's talking about people who backed Obama and not with Trump. That said, Rebecca Clayfish, a little bit more of a kind of follow-up this week when she's been accusing Mandela of kneeling during the anthem, according to people who've told her this.
At the opening ceremonies for the state fair, correct?
With no evidence whatsoever to back it up. And when pressed for it, she could say, well, I heard it from other people. That's a little dangerous thing to do. And then you have this dynamic. You have Barnes accusing her of being, one, a liar, and two, noting that, you know, here is a white woman accusing a black man of something, and he says, stirring up racial tensions in this race. Now, it's maybe a 1 or 2 day story. Rebecca went in the WTMJ the next day and apologized. So maybe that was the best thing to do, although they extend it by one more day. Maybe this all goes away. But it did interject into this race the whole anthem issue. And maybe, intentionally or not, it's going to inflame some people about that because it doesn't play well with the Republican base. And oh, by the way, the Republican base is not very fired up right now. So maybe this jazz them a little bit.
That's a good call. Oh, I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's The Political Beat Goes On. That's Rewind for September 2-1.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.